Welcome to Horangi Cybersecurity's Ask a CISO podcast. Come with us as we take a deep dive behind the scenes with the world's top cybersecurity leaders to get insights into security issues you care about. Before we take off, please help us grow by taking just a few seconds to like and subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and leave us a review letting us know what you think of the podcast and how we can improve.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Ask a CISO podcast, powered by Horangi. I'm Raphael Perret, the Vice President of Product here at Horangi, and I'll be presenting our podcast this week. Before I introduce our guest, please don't forget to like and subscribe or follow us on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts to help us grow. With me today is Alex Olivier, the product lead at Servos, solving the never-ending headache of authorization for companies large and small. Having worn the hats of developer, consultant, tech lead, and product manager, he has a wide view of business needs from startups through to enterprise and has worked with some of the largest brands in the world across a variety of industries. He has spoken often as a subject matter expert on data, infrastructure, and security topics at CollisionConf, Google Cloud Next, CogX, AI Congress, amongst many others. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the Ask a CISO podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What a list of activities and accomplishments. We're really delighted and honored to have you on the show. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Look forward to this discussion.
Great, so you're calling in from the UK.
Yep, I'm in London, which is not raining for once.
Well, that's great news. Going on to the main subject for today, cybersecurity. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into cybersecurity?
Yeah, absolutely. I sort of fell into it by accident, I guess. Started out, as a young age, coding various sorts of websites and these sort of things, I inevitably ended up working in tech. I started my career at Microsoft, where I got thrown in at the deep end doing technical consulting. And my clients at the time were banks like HSBC, NatWest in the UK, the NHS, I did quite a lot. And I was dealing with the .NET side of things. So I kind of had to get up to speed very quickly on kind of the security side of software development and best practices and these sort of things. And then moved over into more like a development type role. So I went into a couple of startups, started as a sort of a JavaScript type dev, front end dev, probably call it full stack these days. And then moved to various roles, tech lead, et cetera. But ultimately ended up in kind of a product management role, always looking at the data and infrastructure side of the house and side of the systems. And it was through that where I kind of got passed on to me some of the responsibilities from kind of the CISO type persona. So some of the things I had to look after was how we managed our access control systems and these sort of things. So going through ISO compliance, all your typical certifications, was exposed to a lot of it since then. And since then, through various other different companies, and now Servos, very much in that world and focusing on it as an area where we can make improvements, let's say.
Great. And I mean, the endless pleasure that is compliance always keeps us on our toes. So you mentioned Servos, you're one of the founders. It's a startup that tackles access control, and I know that we're going to go a little bit more into what part, but can you tell us a bit about why you chose that area of security, like access control versus many different facets that exist?
Yeah, absolutely. So my previous companies, I've worked in like e-commerce, I've worked in supply chain, I've worked in fitness, I've worked in some finance systems. There was also this commonality in them, and where every system had different users, they had different personas or different roles, they belonged to different organizations, and all of these systems were SaaS platforms, and users had to interact with each other. And I was the product manager responsible for kind of the user permissions, the access control, the data security, and these sort of things. And what I found myself doing, as well as the rest of the team here at Servos in our previous companies as well, is we ended up having to keep building this one component, which is this access control or this authorization piece. That business logic that decides who's allowed to do what. At first, you start like everyone probably does, you start off just by hard coding some if else statements. This person's an admin, they should do everything, or this person's email address ends with the company email domain, thus they should be able to do everything. But as you kind of build and evolve your system, you now have to have more granular roles, and you want to bring on customers, and you start signing, say, some big enterprise customer that wants different roles and permissions for their organizations. And through my career, I've had to rebuild that system across a few different companies at least half a dozen times, because you built something that works, then the requirements change just because, let's say, you've broken out into microservices, or your sales team wants to change how the packaging works, and thus the permissions, the features has to change, or you sign that big customer that has some custom organizational requirements, you end up having to rebuild the system over and over. So, you know, very much coming from a software developer background, don't repeat yourself. The dry methodology is always the back of my mind, and like, well, why the hell do we keep building this thing over and over again? Why don't we go and build this and solve it once and for all? And hence we built Serbos as an open source project that's out there and being used by hundreds of companies today to manage this headache.
Well, what I find really interesting is, you know, in software, so much today has been made boilerplate or into frameworks or levels of abstraction, you know, so that now, you know, you're building a front end, you're going to be using some front end frameworks. You've got all of these parts of the stack that have been made into these common, you know, or a few competing industry standard ways of looking at this. And I think access control, it's still bespoke every single time.
Yeah, and this is kind of a repeating pattern of this kind of like decouple, these components, so I call it the Lego blocks of building software these days. You know, if you go back over the history of computing, if you start, you know, back and look at something like, say, databases, go back to, you know, the early 90s and before then, if you wanted to store data in a database, you would have to build that logic into your application. You'd have to define how you store that data on disk, how you read it, how you filter it, etc. Then something like, you know, say MySQL, Postgres, these kind of tools are now available. You want a database, you pull it off the shelf, plug it in, off you go. Don't have to think about it again, you know, unless you are a database company. Same thing happened now when it comes to like cloud storage. You know, you don't run your own infrastructure to then serve blocks. You just go and use S3 or GCS or something. A much closer example is authentication. You know, go back 5-10 years ago, you might have, if you were building software, you would have that table in your database of username and passwords, hopefully sorted and hashed, in your database. And you have to manage rotation. And then things like two-factor authentication and single sign-on came along, and you'd have to like build all this stuff in. Nowadays, who builds their own authentication? Actually, very few. And I would be very surprised if there's a real need to these days. You go and pick a, you know, an Okta Auth 0 or Azure AD B2C or Firebase Auth, and you just plug that in. So there's been this kind of constant series of evolutions of things that you don't have to build anymore. And yeah, you're right. Access control and authorization is kind of one that there isn't a de facto, I'd say. There is a lot of ways of approaching it. There's a lot of great projects out there that, you know, we even use. But there it's getting to a point now where there's enough kind of understanding of the problem space, and there's enough kind of trust in these open source solutions where you can get to the point now where you just go and pull that next Lego brick and put it in your stack, and thus allowing you to focus on your business value and the, you know, the core of your business, not having to worry about all the underlying tech.
Yeah. Work on the stuff that differentiates you, the business logic, not the piping. And just to finish up on that authentication piece, I mean, if anyone's listening to us, unless they are experts that have a need for customization, please go and use the boilerplate stuff that works out there, because the number of breaches that we hear about, that we see, is often because somebody has poorly implemented a solution. It can be thought for authentication or other similar security pieces, and that, you know, they have a small team, they didn't look at some edge cases. And then there's a whole bunch of personal user data that gets out into the world.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So you mentioned, you know, we were talking about access control. You kind of touched a little bit on authentication. Can you just give us a recap of high level? What is access control? What are the pieces? You know, auth kind of stands for both, right? So So just to make sure everybody's at the same level of understanding about what it is exactly that we're talking about, maybe a couple of examples to make it clear.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's my biggest sort of pet peeve in this industry that everything just gets called auth when actually you have authentication, authorization, audit even potentially gets thrown under that sometimes. And these are very discrete systems or components of a system that you need to think about. So they get confused all the time. Even the acronyms like AuthZ and AuthN are used and thrown about, which equally is kind of confusing. But you know, base level authentication, this is really about understanding, is the person who they are, who they say they are. So they need to provide you with some sort of credential. That credential gets validated, and now you know that that person is authenticated. You know who they are, and that's their identity. It has nothing to do with what access they have or what they're allowed to do. It's just simply saying this person is who they say they are. Authorization is
kind of a parallel. It would be, hey, here's my ID. I'm John Smith, and like you believe this piece of ID. Or these pieces of ID, if it's MFA or whatever it is that you have there.
Yeah, and you know, your typical Google login, GitHub logins, these sort of things. Yeah, when we build systems today, and we integrate and say we allow you to log in with your Google account, we're essentially saying we as a business, we trust Google to actually manage your user accounts. Google is going to provide us that authentication that has proven who you say you are because you've been able to provide that credential. And now in your application, you can essentially trust that this person is who they say they are. But to your app, all you know and know is, okay, this person is Alex. He is who he is. Beyond that, it's kind of up to you to decide.
So that ID, you're saying, you're not the one checking, it's not a fake ID. You're saying, hey, Google, yeah, this guy is who he says he is. Okay, cool. I'll trust that. Now let's move on to the next step.
Exactly. So now in your say you're building something like SaaS platform, you now know this person is who they say they are. Now in your application and in your business logic, you got to decide, okay, what can this person actually do? And the kind of naive thing is, oh, they're authenticated. They should be able to do everything. If not, they're not allowed to do anything. That's kind of your very simple type system. Where authorization comes in is, okay, this person is this who they say they are. What are they actually allowed to do inside of the system? And authorization now is where you start defining those rules, that business logic of, okay, this person's part of an organization, or they're part of this team, they're part of this structure. You know, you might have a directory system, so LDAP, AD, these kind of things that puts users into groups and roles. You can use that information to make decisions on whether a particular action should be authorized or not, so AuthZ now. And defining that business logic, you can go from very simple to just hard coding it into your app. Or you can use something like Serbos, which kind of extracts that logic out into a standalone service, and you define this business logic of what conditions must be met for this particular action to be allowed. And those conditions could be based on the user, could be based on what resource they're trying to access. So can Alex edit this blog post? Can John go and comment on this thread? Can Steve in finance approve this invoice? This is all the business rules that you're defining. And that is the authorization logic. And it's the critical bit in your code once someone's authenticated that makes that decision. Should this be allowed or not? You know, should this allow or deny for this particular action based on all the context I know about who the user is and what they're trying to do?
You started to go a little bit into authorization. On authentication, mm-hmm. Is it a solved problem? What's the challenge there? And then we're going to ask kind of the same questions on authorization.
Yeah. I would say at this point, we're at a pretty solved state for authentication. Now, there's a lot we all hear about, all these breaches and weak 2FA and multi-factor authentication. I don't think a week goes by where there's not some breach usually caused by someone getting a two-factor code from an SMS message that's been spoofed or something. But the core of storing a credential and then authenticating a credential, that's a kind of a well-known standard. You're probably familiar with OAuth 2 and all these kind of common frameworks for exchanging securely these credentials. Like, I would say that is very much a solved space. There's some work to be done around how we can actually really go to the next level of trust in a credential. without going into the whole blockchain discussion. But you know, making sure we're using sensible methods of a second factor, so relying on like a YubiKey rather than an SMS and these sort of things. But as a whole, as a standard, I say authentication is in a very good space. There's always going to be improvements as technology improves, but it's a pretty well-known and pretty, at the surface, quite a simple sort of API interface, as it were.
And essentially, everyone's problem about authentication is the same. Tell me who this guy is and how much should I trust it, et cetera. Okay, so now let's talk about authorization.
Yeah, so authorization is trickier because now it's very much coupled with what your application, your business does. Whilst authentication is very simple API, here's a credential, is it them, yes or no? Authorization is now very contextual. So you've probably heard of phrases like RBAC and ABAC, so role-based access control. You know who someone is, they've got some roles associated with them, should they be able to do something? That is business logic that's going to be now in your code base. And essentially the API you're having to interact with is a bit more complicated, because now you're going to have to provide context about the principle, so a user or a machine token or an API key. And potentially if you want to do things like ABAC or attribute-based access control, you need to make decisions based on the attributes of the particular resource or action that user is trying to take. And now you're getting into this world where you're kind of starting to couple or mix in your authorization logic with your business logic into your code or into your kind of workflows. And that's why it's a bit trickier to sort of standardize or trickier to make kind of a one-size-fits-all solution using kind of traditional methods and as I keep saying, most of the time you can just hard code that if-else statement or that case switch statement based on roles and you're great. But as you scale up, as you get these other requirements coming in, then it gets a bit tricky, and then you need to look at potentially a different approach to it to kind of scale out and decouple that logic so you're not tied into a particular framework or system to defining that logic inside your application.
And the edge cases just start getting crazy when you have else, and like refactoring your code becomes a nightmare. I mean, it's easy to put in place, but it keeps hurting you every single time you make a change.
Yeah, absolutely. And the pain, as it were, kind of very much dictated by two things. One is the actual requirements. So you've got a new client that wants some custom permissions, or you want to rework how you do access to particular features based on pricing and packaging. And that's kind of your business side requirements. But there's also a technical requirements aspect to this as well. So if you're building like a monolithic application, it's all in one code base, it's all in one language, you could probably quite nicely abstract away some of this logic and write it in like one module, which you can then reuse across different parts of that monolithic application. The moment you move to microservices and potentially services in different languages, this problem gets 10 times worse or 100 times worse, or infinity times worse. Because now whenever you need to go and touch your code again to change some of the authorization logic because there's been some business change, let's say you just go into microservices, but they're all in the same language, you're going to have to go to each of those code bases, update that logic. So you're probably going to take that requirement from like a product owner, product manager, a security team saying we need to, you know, add some further checks in. You have to go and implement that in each of your services, deploy, run, test, off you go. In the worst case, and probably the world that quite a lot of larger applications are in, is actually you might have loads of different services, but those services might be in different languages. So you might have some front-end thing in Node, you might in React and Node, you might have some back-end thing in Python, say you're doing like some ML-y stuff. You might have some legacy component in, say, .NET or Java running. When a requirement changes, you now have that business requirement, you have that, you know, Jira ticket or whatever that says this biz logic needs to change. And then each of your development teams in each of those languages is going to have to take that logic, figure out how to turn it into code for each of those services and release those. And so you're kind of relying on the implementation of that logic being the same across an n number of different languages, depending on how heterogeneous your system is. And that is just causing more work plus more testing required, et cetera, et cetera. Because your authorization business logic is now spread across n number of services and n number of different languages. And the complexity to keep this stuff up to date and evolve it as fast as your business requirements change just gets insane. And I've been in those shoes both as a developer and as a product person. And it is the most painful work to do because the more time you spend on that, the less time you're spending on actually building, you know, the core value of your business, and having some sort of off-the-shelf solution that can manage that for you takes all that away.
So, Sirboss, from what we've understood so far, you've managed to find some of the commonalities in this authorization piece, which we discussed was super tied into the business logic. Can you tell us, how does that work? How does it work? Tell us a bit about Sirboss.
Yeah, so Sirboss, firstly, completely open source. You can go and grab it on GitHub, github.com/Sirboss, Sirboss at the repo. And what we've taken, so myself and the rest of the team, we've taken many, many, many years of pain and tried to solve it in a solution which is that Lego brick or that component you can pick off the shelf and plug it into your stack. So the way Sirboss works, it's a scalable open source decoupled authorization layer for your application. So when you want to go and implement those roles and permissions, you don't have to build any of that logic that we've been kind of talking about. And the way it works is you deploy a Sirboss instance inside of your network, inside of your infrastructure, inside of your cluster. It's running completely local. It can be completely firewalled off to the internet, etc. And then in your application, where the points in your code where you want to make an authorization check, rather than hard coding that business logic, if they're an admin, do this. If they're an owner, do this. If they're XYZ, do this other thing. You now replace that with a call out from your service to one of the Sirboss instances that are running inside of your network. And Sirboss itself is completely stateless, so you can run as many of these as you want. You can even run it as like a Lambda function even. And you send a request to a Sirboss instance in your code base saying, I have this authenticated user. So they got this ID, they're in this team, they're in this organization, etc. They're trying to access this particular resource. So let's say they're trying to look at an expense in like an expenses system. Has this ID, has this amount, has this approval list, etc. that's in this state. And the user's trying to do this particular action on it. So it could be create, read, update, delete. It could be approve, deny, comment. You know, it's open-ended for you to define. And you send that request over to a Sirboss instance. That Sirboss instance now contains your business logic defined as policy rather than code. So you define your business logic of, okay, here are the different resource types in my system. Here are the different actions users can do upon these resource types. So I can create this resource, I can delete it, I can approve it, deny it, comment, flag. It's completely open-ended for you to define. And then you also define what conditions must be met for each of those actions to be allowed or denied. And so using that context that comes in that request from your application, this principal, this team, or et cetera, this resource, et cetera, you then define your logic as simple definitions of, okay, they must have this role, they must have this field, must be set to true, this attribute must be, you know, a positive number, let's say, this attribute must be a Boolean that must be allowed, denied, let's say. And you define this logic as this configuration, and you define it in one place. Today, they're all YAML definition files. So if you're familiar with like Kubernetes manifests, they look very similar. And you write this conditional logic inside of here, and you can and or else, you know, switch. You can do quite complex conditional logic to basically make a decision based on those inputs of principle, resource, and action for whether a resource, whether an action should be allowed or not. So what goes back to your code base and back into your application is a simple Boolean, allow or deny, true or false. So before, where you might have had that big complicated if else style statement, you now have a single if statement. If Sirboss says allow, great, allow off you go. If not, say deny, return some sort of authorization error. So decoupling that logic out into a separate service, if we're going back to our like microservices world, if we have 10 different services in 5 different languages, all of them are calling to a Sirboss instance to make an authorization decision, which means when the requirements change or when your business logic changes for authorization, there's a single point, which is your Sirboss policy definition files, where you change that business logic and you push those out. And now all your applications will start serving based on that new logic without having you to go back and touch your code base or redeploy your application. So you can be far more nimble and you can be far more agile in terms of how you manage your authorization logic. And there's a load of other benefits that come from that around audit is a big one. So, you know, one of the things I used to have to do in kind of previous roles where I was looking after data systems and data security, going through compliance that we're talking about, every year I used to get dragged into a deep dark conference room in the basement of the building by an auditor, and I had to go and demonstrate various things. But one of the things that you have to do quite often is demonstrate our access control logs and how we show and track access to our systems. And back then we didn't have something standardized in place, so you ended up having to like grep through S3 logs showing requests failing or with errors, etc. One of the side effects and one of the benefits of having a standalone authorization service that's still private and running inside of your network is there's a single point where all the decisions are made. So now, regardless of where you're doing permission checks from, front end, back end, some async worker queue, some batch job, some legacy thing running in a dark corner somewhere, because all the decisions are being going through a Cerberus instance or instances, you're going to get a clean and consistent audit log. At this time, this principal tried to do this action on this resource and it was either allowed or denied. So you have this clean log, and looking back at what I had to do in the past, this would have made my life so much easier because there's now a single clean audit history of exactly what happened in your system without you having to think about implementing it across all your different services. So Cerberus does all of this. It's clearly open source. It's Apache 2 license. You know, there's no commercial agreement or anything in place if you want to use Cerberus as kind of a developer or inside of your service, and you're happy to run everything in your stack. We have also just launched a Cerberus cloud offering as well, which is a managed control plane to make the operational side of managing Cerberus policies and authorization logic easier. But we can talk more about that later.
It sounds very similar for those that are familiar with managing IAM, you know, for the large cloud service providers, where essentially you can have various things like always deny, for example, on this floor, you are never allowed to enter the maintenance corridor, and then just and separately, rather than looking at all of the combinations of everything, you can kind of define it, as you said, policy by policy, and let the machine kind of superimpose those various logics to check, like, hey, is this allowed or not? Which makes enforcing policies really easy at the expense maybe of like listing out all of the edge cases, which in this case is more of a feature than a bug. Right?
Yeah, and very early on, the way we used to describe Cerberus is like AWS IAM for your own application. But we discovered that people have a lot of nightmares when it comes to IAM policies. So we kind of moved away from that messaging, but it's still very good way of kind of describing essentially where Cerberus fits in your stack.
Yeah. As you were describing it, the kind of the image that came to my mind was really this, you know, the key card access systems that you have in these in buildings where, and I used to have this at university, where I had a little dongle to open my door, the door to my dorm, and when there was a problem, they had to physically come and reprogram that kind of door. And you compare that to the key card systems that you have today, where basically, like, at any point in time, they'll just say, oh yeah, I'll allow you access to this floor, because every single door is connected to a central system that works exactly like Cerberus, right? Like it's the brain of, oh, this person is in maintenance, they're allowed to go there. The janitor gets access to the janitor closet. You're allowed to go to the toilets on your floor. But and all of that logic is can be expressed really kind of simply, human readably, and easy to add or you know edit without having to like go door to door.
Yeah, I love that analogy, and that's actually a really, really, really good way of kind of visualizing it, and it's kind of spot on. I guess the bit I would add is also, you know, those doors maybe in the past it might have been just binary. Have you got a card that's allowed through this door? Yes or no? And that's kind of what I would say is like RBAC, role-based access control. Have you got access to this door? Yes or no? We're now very much in a world of ABAC or attribute-based access control, where the decision is far more contextual. So now that door access control system might say, okay, you're allowed through this door, but only through office hours, or you're only allowed through this door if someone else has greenlit it elsewhere, and these kind of things, where you're making decisions now not only based on who you are, but also context about maybe where you are or what you're doing or the time of day and these sort of things. And if you look at software applications, you know, think of how many systems where you have different access if you own, say, the document than if you don't. And owner is actually the best example of where RBAC or role-based access control falls down. because you could never have a blanket owner role inside of your system, because owner is contextual based on the thing you're trying to access, because you are the owner of the document if that document's owner ID is equal to your ID, for example. And actually most systems are using ABAC or attribute-based access control without really realizing it. And so you're already sort of defining this business logic of, okay, if the user ID is equal to the owner ID, then it should be allowed. And that's where the complexity really starts coming, because traditionally you'd be hard coding that logic into your SQL query, into your code base. Servos helps you by extracting all of that out in something that's far more human readable and version controllable. Is that a word? Version controllable? Let's go with that. Versionable. Let's go. and auditable. That's outside of your code base. So someone beyond a developer could actually see what's going on, such as a CISO, such as a product owner, to really understand, or even an auditor examine what's happening and how it's implemented.
You know, again, as you were talking about it, it sounds like you're talking about, you know, authorization as code. Now, unfortunately, it's not code, but like it has the benefits of code in terms of the version control, the auditability, even like, you know, the review of changes before they, you know, whatever pipeline, et cetera.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we all come from here at Servos, we all come from development backgrounds. You know, we've experienced Microsoft, Google, Elastic, all sorts. And, you know, we're used to quite complex software development life cycles and software development processes. So with the authorization policies, the actual policy files where you define your logic, we've very much taken a GitOps style workflow. So your authorization logic, your Servos policy files, you know, we recommend you store them in a Git repo, and we provide tooling for running CI and CD on them. You know, you can actually write full unit tests against your Servos policy alongside your actual policy files. And you can say, okay, for here, here's five example users, here are five example resources. This particular action should be allowed for this user, denied for this user, et cetera. And that catches so many edge cases. Even when I'm writing policies and I do it day in, day out, I'm still finding all these edge cases that I didn't think of until I actually ran the tests and realized, oh, that logic shouldn't be run. So we really pushing and recommend using like a GitOps style workflow. We provide the tooling. We have GitHub Actions support for validating your policy files, running the tests. And then the Servos instances themselves, you can configure to have them pull down from the Git repo on some regular basis to go and fetch the latest updates, and you tell it which branch you want to run from. So if you're using something like Flux or something with your Kubernetes clusters, it's the exact same workflow with your Servos policy definitions. And if that all scares you, there's a Servos cloud offering that will be coming out very soon, which makes all that easier for you, so you don't have to run any pipelines yourself.
Great. Really exciting stuff. Tell us about Servos cloud. I think importantly, who is it for? I mean,
yeah,
you know, versus the self-hosted, what are your targets?
Yeah. So first thing is the actual service that's making decisions of whether an action should be allowed or denied should always run as close to your application as possible. So Servos Cloud is designed to talk to those Servos instances that are running inside of your network. So when your application is making an authorization check, it is making a local call, you know, ideally if you're running like Kubernetes inside the same pod, to a Servos instance that's running as close as possible to your application. Because what you authorization, it has to be in the blocking request path of every call to your application. Because unlike authentication, where you can authenticate and get a token for say 10 minutes, authorization is contextual based on every single request and action that's being done. So that check, whether this action should be allowed or not, needs to be super quick. Ideally, you know, zero latency, but let's be realistic. So the Servos instances run alongside your application, the policy decision point, the PDP is the kind of the formal term for it. Where Servos Cloud comes in is the pipeline for actually getting your policy files, which are stored externally, say in another Git repo, up, tested, validated, and if they're validated, compiled and pushed out to those Servos instances that are running your stack. So it's a management control plane for your Servos instances that are running in your environment. And today, and the first kind of audience we're targeting with this release is to still a developer or like a DevOps type person to make their lives a bit easier. So it will manage the compilation, testing, validating of your policy files. It will manage the synchronized rollouts of policy updates to all your instances, which is a big one. So in the open source version, those policies, if you have five instances running, they may be all polling for updates on different intervals. With the Serverless Cloud as the management layer behind it, Serverless Cloud manages the synchronized rollout, so all your policy changes get pushed out at the same time. And that's what we've announced, and you know, I don't know when this podcast will come out, but we're going to be showing more of that at KubeCon in Amsterdam this week, and there'll be a lot more coming that way. But really what this is the foundation of where we're going with Serverless, which is actually enable the real people that hold the requirements for authorization, which is going to be a product owner or a product manager or a security person maybe, who probably isn't going to be living in the code base every day, and but still is the person that's responsible for authorization, and provide and use Serverless Cloud as a layer where they can interact with policy and audit logs in a UI more clicky friendly format, rather than have to write YAML files and manage deployment pipelines behind the scenes. So Serverless Cloud is where we'll allow you to start collaborating between your developers, your product teams, your security teams in a single pane of glass, which gives you not only the workflow for updating and evolving policy, but also auditing policy and understanding how decisions were made and managing potential instances and pulling out logs, et cetera, all in a single managed service.
That's great. I mean, it sounds like one of those cases where to the developers, it's going to be, I have less people on my back about these things. They can just go directly to the source. Oh, you want a new requirement? Just like, boom, go add it in. You want to add that only on what office hours? I, as a developer, don't even need to know.
Right. Yep, exactly.
How do you implement this? What does the implementation journey look like for this? Let's talk about an existing application. What does that look like?
Yeah, so the implementing of Serverless, the open source or the cloud version, is actually more of a business problem rather than a technical problem. You know, what we generally find is 90% of the effort involved for implementing any authorization service, not just Serverless, is actually getting the right stakeholders around the table and actually writing that, you know, that spreadsheet or that jury ticket of what the permissions actually need to be. Because everyone has got a slightly different view on it. You know, your product person is worried about whether actions should be allowed based on the product features. Maybe you might have someone in the sales team who wants to scope features down so they can package and upsell them. You'll have requirements from your data security side of the house or your audit side of the house who want to do things like data locality requirements. And actually getting all of that down on one paper, in one document, is actually the bulk of the work. We have a whole guide that we published on like just how to do this, written by Emre, our CEO, who's been CISO and CTO of various companies over the years and has been through this. So that getting that definition down is step one. The next one is actually turning that business logic, which is now on a single bit of paper, into Serverless policy. And that actually is relatively simple. Once you really have understood the requirements, it's pretty trivial to convert it into Serverless policy. And the way we kind of recommend do this is there's no need to do a big bang approach to this. With Serverless, because it's a resource sort of focused way of implementing policies, you're defining resource by resource what the actions are, what the conditions would be. You can actually incrementally adopt Serverless. So we always tell users, you know, once you've got your definitions down, pick one resource. It may be some like secondary resource or maybe one of your main key thing in your system, and just go and implement Serverless with that. And that gets you into kind of the flow of what it takes to go into your code base, any previous checks you've done, replacing them with the Serverless SDK. You don't have to necessarily run hundreds of Serverless instances in your infrastructure at that point if you're just checking a single resource type. So work with your DevOps team or whoever is to manage the deployment to get Serverless running in your infrastructure and just kind of go through the motions of getting that single resource going. Once you really understand the work involved, then you can start adding number 2, 3, 4, 5 until you kind of migrated over fully to Serverless. You know, we have users who have done this in overnight. We've had users done this in a week. We've had users done this in 6 months. It really kind of depends on the organizational complexity more than the technical complexity to get everything in place. But things like blockchain.com, utility warehouse, you know, big companies are using Serverless today, managing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of users without kind of any hiccups. And really is just having that discipline to go from the business requirements all on the same page, defined once, and then incrementally adopting Serverless. To get you to a point where you can then start taking advantage of all the feature sets and, you know, the business benefits of being able to evolve your authorization logic centrally rather than have to go and touch a code base, and then you can scale up from there.
Great. It's really the, again, in the analogy we were talking about earlier, you don't need to change all of that, all of those access points right away. Start with one, test it on the janitor closet where, you know, maybe it's lower risk than the server room door. Exactly. And then little by little, then once you have everything, that's when you can really kind of take it to the next level, because you can really start playing with some of the things that that Servos brings you. And I think
I need
to go talk to my dev team and ask them about it, because obviously we have a lot of both RBAC and ABAC for various different parts of our platform. Cool. I think we're you know, close to time. Is there anything that you would like to tell our listeners as kind of the last thing for them to keep in mind at the end of this conversation, or, you know, recommendation in thinking about access control and authorization?
Yeah, the big reason why we go on these podcasts and speak to people like yourselves, we go to all these conferences, we go and speak at events, etc., is actually not to speak about Servos. It's actually just to let people know that this concept of like decoupling your authorization logic from your application is possible. You know, it's a relatively new way of approaching things. The benefits, hopefully, as you've heard, kind of really do probably outweigh some of the pain of having to go to the implementation. But it is possible to do this, and it is possible to do this in a way that's scalable. You know, we have some the largest sort of fintech type companies out there using Servos today. In anger, as it were. So if whether you're just starting your journey and you're designing a new application, definitely put something like Servos into that architecture and don't waste time building it. Or if you are at the other end where you have like a legacy application that maybe you have to do some modernization to, that's still completely possible because you can incrementally adopt Servos. So regardless of who you use for authentication, how your application is deployed, how your application is architected, it is completely possible to go and put in decoupled authorization that will actually scale with you and enable you to unlock the next sets of requirements when it comes to access controls or permissions inside of your system.
Great. Once again, thank you for coming onto the podcast, Alex. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation and really hope you did too. To those listening, thanks for tuning in. Once again, this is the Ask a CISO podcast, and this is Raphael signing off.